Hey, hey, Kevin Guthrie here, talking all things mental health. So remember, these podcasts are being recorded to help us destigmatize mental health and help us understand it a little bit more. Because for me, it's not understood quite enough, and therefore that prevents access to talking therapists or anything really support-wise. I'm going to welcome today Helen Ellison again. Welcome, Helen.
Hi, nice to be here.
So for people that didn't listen to a previous podcast, just give us a little bit of background into what you do.
So I'm the Health Improvement Officer at Newark and Sherwood District Council. So we deliver an array of projects, schemes that we hope improve our communities and residents' health and wellbeing.
So today we're going to talk all things children, body image, self-esteem, social media. You were talking earlier about a scheme that you've got going.
Yeah, so I've linked in the past, how many years ago did we start? But I want to say about 4 years ago, mm-hmm. with two friends that are, they were extended services coordinators. So they were employed by the schools,
yep.
to deliver anything in and around the curriculum. So after school clubs, peer mentors, anything that can support those young people. And in partnership, we ran for a couple of years, just a week per year, per academic year, called Healthy Minds Week.
Yep.
And it was kind of just linking with other services, training providers. Yep. We delivered sessions ourselves around prevention, yep. Education for children, young people. It was very age appropriate around healthy minds and actually talking about mental health to young people. So it became, as they grow, and they do it every year, but a different theme or subject, yeah. every year, that it's it's destigmatized, because it's all right that in reception, we were asked what we thought about mental health, and they designed a poster or something very simple that we would hope had a bit of a lasting effect.
And how was it received?
Brilliantly, absolutely brilliantly. Some schools more so than others.
Yeah.
Very dependent on teaching staff and their own personal, whether it be personal experience or personal opinion on that, yeah. as a subject, which you're going to get in everything. We did a lot in the secondary schools around self-harm.
Yep.
They were really powerful. And the students absolutely loved those subjects. A lot around, and one of my favourite sessions to deliver is body image. So yep. to years 5 and 6, when it's just starting to be a thing, actually, that yeah. with transitioning to year 7 and secondary school, it's a big time socially, big yeah. time for them as individuals. That body image and that self-esteem, really, and self-confidence.
I once wrote a spiral curriculum for a school many, many years ago, and I actually put self-respect through every level. So I was proposing how I was going to deliver into the school, and I said to them, I've put self-esteem in from early years, and they were like, why? And I went, because I wanted it to be threaded through yeah. the entire system. Because for me, self-esteem is the baseline for everything we do.
Absolutely.
And if we have good self-esteem, then everything else is much better. Self-esteem, self-respect.
And as a parent, and this yep. was a big thing for me, going on a course around self-esteem, we don't get a handbook, do we, when nope. we have children, babies? And actually, how we have the biggest impact on their self-esteem,
yeah.
by the minutest thing that you would never connect, having yeah. an impact. And I think that for me was like a bit of an alarm bell. Woo, I get it, and I know about mental health, and I kind of work in it in a soft way.
Yeah.
But if I'm not doing it right, that's the wrong way of putting it. If I'm saying things, or the way that as a parent I am,
yeah.
it's not quite right, or not quite saying the right thing, that I can have such an impact on my child's self-esteem.
Yeah.
I don't think I got the enormity of it, if I'm being honest.
You know, really, really simple way of impacting your child's self-esteem in a really positive way is to, as you put them to bed, always ask them 3 things that they've enjoyed about today, the day that they've just had. And it doesn't need to be necessarily things about themselves. It could be something they've enjoyed, something they've eaten, something they've seen. Something about themselves would be really, really powerful. But what we're going to do is we're going to try and get there as we keep doing that. And it just sends them to sleep on a really nice note.
Yeah.
It sends them to sleep reflecting back on the day in a really positive way. And if you do that from as young an age as you can, then what will happen is they'll start developing their mind in that way. Three little things every night. It's so simple, it's ridiculous.
See, we tend to do that over dinner.
That's good.
But I've never thought about doing it before bed because how relaxing, and what a great note to go to sleep on.
Tell me what you've enjoyed about today.
Yeah.
Or tell me why you like yourself.
And then my kids would always flip it and go, go on then, Mummy, what have you enjoyed today? And you're like, oh.
Lead by example.
You know, you think, oh, I don't know what to say.
Sometimes if I'm working with a parent as a therapist who I know has low self-esteem and they have a child, sometimes I'll use the child as a vehicle. Mm. So sometimes I'll say, okay, we know that we're going to develop your self-esteem, but what we're going to do it is via the child. So I want you to start doing these exercises with the child, but you are going to lead it, and you are going to lead by example. And it's a really interesting way of getting them to recognize their own self-esteem without them sitting with their own piece of homework. And I'm going to say, no, we're going to do it with the child because the child needs it as well.
Yeah.
And it's a great way of...
And actually, to a parent, if you involve a child, they're going to do it.
Absolutely. And that's why I do it.
Absolutely going to do it.
Yeah.
I can remember we did, as part of the body image sessions, what the end sheet, so they have a few worksheets. We do it, it's very whole class conversations. It's not kind of death by PowerPoint sort of thing.
Yeah.
And one of the questions, or one of the sheets at the end, asks, write down three, it's not skills, three things that you like about yourself.
Yeah.
Three personal attributes that you really enjoy, like you like about yourself. They can't do it.
No.
90% of the children, and you're talking classes of 30 children, in some schools, three classes per year group, 90% of those children cannot complete that sheet.
Yeah.
And they'll go, well, I'm really good at football. And I'm like, that's a skill.
Yeah.
What about you? Well, I'm bilingual. Again, that's a skill.
Yeah.
Well, can you give me an example, miss? And actually then one young girl in one school, it was, and I'll never forget this, she wrote, I've got a great figure and great eyebrows. And the teacher really homed in on that and was like, well done you. Mm. Well done for coming up with something that you like about yourself. Yeah. Because we're not great at doing that, are we?
No.
And another student said, well, I'd just call her a big head if she said that.
Absolutely. And that's why we don't say it.
Exactly, because we get then given that label as being a big head. Yeah. But actually, if we don't talk about the things that are good about us, then how's anyone else?
There's still so much stigma. When I'm working with clients and we go down the self-esteem route and we start to unpick why, and I'm like, but tell me something you like about yourself. And they're like, well, I feel really uncomfortable answering that question. And I say, well, tell me why. They go, well, you know, it's a little bit arrogant. And it's always that one word, arrogant, big-headed. And interestingly, when we unpick that further, that's usually come from an adult or a primary carer in their childhood.
Yeah, exactly. Which is quite scary, that that little bit, that little sentence or those few words would have that long-lasting effect.
Well, that will have been learned from the adult that delivered that. That would have been learned by somebody else, and then from somebody else, and then from... And we go back generations and generations. But it's all learned from somewhere. But in some area, we have to kind of put it to a stop and encourage positive self-esteem.
And I think that's why that question, it was such a simple question that's on one of the worksheets, and it was literally 5 minutes, why that had most impact on me, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's not acceptable, or it's seen to not be acceptable to have that self-respect and self-esteem to be able to say, well, actually, no, I've got this, or I'm good at this, or I'm a great friend, or I'm a great listener. And we don't congratulate ourselves enough for the things that we are as human beings, and all very individual, that we're good at.
In therapy, I talk about self-validation quite a lot. And people are like, oh, what's self-validation? I says, well, you know, as babies, we're always validated for the things that we do. Oh, you're such a good little girl. Look, you can sit up now, and you can walk now, and you can talk now, and you can feed yourself. It's validation after validation after validation. It comes and it comes and it comes. But then at some point, it almost feels like it stops. And then it may be picked up by being validated by other people, by partners, boyfriends, husbands, And then sometimes we get validated at work. But at any point, if it stops, we feel the gap. And then we start panicking a little bit because there's no validation coming in.
We need them for that.
It leaves a space. It leaves a space where somebody would have said, I don't know, you're really good at that, or you're really good at this, or you're really pretty, or... And I say there's no power. There is no power like having your own ability to validate or to feed your own self-esteem. And it's not arrogant and it's not big-headed.
And but I bet that's really hard to... I don't even want to say retrain yourself to... But that's very different. It's a very different way of thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, entirely. But we start off small. I encourage people to, I don't know, just get to the end of the day and say, tell me what you did good today. Tell me what you liked about today.
And that, for me, would be so simple to do it in every classroom.
Yeah, so simple.
So simple at the end of the day to share those. I know my son in his school, they do circle time.
Yeah.
So they'll say something that they've enjoyed that day, or something that they found hard, or something they've needed help with.
Yeah.
But just to have that conversation whereby you are not just sat behind a desk working.
So for you... Why do you think that schools find it so difficult to have that time? Because we're talking time there, talking personal time.
Too many, there's targets. They're so stretched. Absolutely. Teachers are so busy. Yeah. And when they finish teaching, they're planning or marking or all those other things. So I'm going to be really honest. This is probably, I don't think teachers are necessarily always the right people to deliver that. I think it's... In terms of that sort of, and I'm not saying that at the end of the day, that's definitely a teacher can just have that 5 minutes to, and I get that we're busy, but the impact of that could be massive.
Yeah.
But actually, in terms of body image, self-esteem, mental health, self-harm, secondary school, that needs to be somebody else.
Yeah.
I think that the children, the young people need to link that to somebody else. That it's not going to be a teacher every day, because actually, if I see that teacher every day, I can't be absolutely honest with how I'm feeling or what kind of I want to say.
It kind of feels like we're talking about two different levels there. So I think teachers could deliver basic questions like, tell me what you've enjoyed about today, things like that. And I think they could be trained to be more aware. If there's any teachers listening to this, can we just say... You do a brilliant job.
Oh, absolutely. Goodness me, definitely. I'm not at all saying
you do,
that.
You do a brilliant job, and we completely understand how stressful those targets are. So let's just put that out there. We are not having a pop. But I do think teachers could deliver that. But I kind of agree with what you're saying as well. When we go down a level and we start working more one-to-one or more therapeutically, then yeah, have a well-being person in the school, or even somebody, a well-being person that's shared throughout a consortium of schools, because we have loads of consortiums now. So that would be another way of doing it. Somebody that is trained to a slightly different level.
And I think some schools do that. I think they really, really get the benefit and get the reasonings, and it's the impact that can have on not every student.
Yeah.
But those students that perhaps need that. But it's smaller schools. It's a resource. But like you say, a consortium of schools, absolutely. Just somebody that those young people can talk to.
Yeah.
Peer mentors is really powerful though. And I do work with a secondary school that has peer mentors in, not in every subject, but whether it's for support in homework or, but we do have mental health peer mentors. And they have Let's Talk sessions. So as a younger student in year 7, who are you going to go and speak to more, a teacher or another peer?
Yeah.
And it's going to be another peer.
Yeah.
And that the power of that is great.
Yeah.
And it's promoting it in the right way.
Yeah.
But it's also then that young person having the confidence in another student they can just go and have a conversation with.
Yeah.
Somebody that's not your friend necessarily. Yeah. Somebody that's not going to judge, somebody that knows what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm all for peer mentors in secondary schools.
No, that's brilliant. So that's a great model to promote. How do you think, we're talking body image there, how do you think social media impacts on body image?
Oh,
does it?
Yeah.
He says tongue in cheek.
Goodness, massively. I don't know, when we look at, I don't know, if I've to ask, we talk about media, and for me, media when I was younger would have been television, movies, music, magazines. That's different now. Media for young people now is YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Snapchat.
Oh, Snapchat, and it's all about something simple, filtering a photo.
Yeah.
My God, how good does she look? And she's this size. And when did this normal image that young girls or young males are aspiring to look like?
Yeah.
When did we ever, as a society, say that that was gospel? That was normal.
Normal.
And I think there's far more pressure to look a certain way now for people. And I think social media is 24/7. There's no switching off from it. No. It's always there. Famous people, there's always adverts of, I don't know, so-and-so promoting this product.
And Kardashians.
As a massive example, let's be honest. What are they promoting?
It's really interesting. I read something the other week that one of the younger Kardashians, Kylie or I can't think of the other one, was the world's youngest billionaire. And I went, oh my God, that is crazy. Absolutely crazy.
And I think, and again, it's probably a bit of an umbrella statement, bit of a stereotype, but young people are aspiring to be, when I was younger, it was aspiring to be a sports person.
Yeah.
Because they were actually the more famous people then.
Yeah.
A couple of music stars, but it wasn't. Actually, now we're aspiring to be these celebrities that like a Kardashian or like someone from The Only Way Is Essex. Or I'm not saying they watch that, but that real, what are they called? Real life, not real life celebrity. I can't remember how they...
Real Housewives of...
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
That we're aspiring to be that, not real.
But they're just, those people are just social media stars, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy.
We were talking about YouTube, and in the class that I was doing, it was year five, very, very female heavy class. And we were talking about YouTube.
Yeah.
James Charles. I'm like, girls, I don't even know who that is. But it's an American guy who is famous for applying makeup, does makeup videos.
Right, okay.
And the kids were obsessed with him.
Yeah.
And the makeup, and great that it was a male doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. But literally obsessed with this social media star.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to, all the kids aspiring to be YouTubers now.
Mm.
But why? Why are we not aspiring to be athletes anymore?
Yeah. Yeah, or anything else. I'm going to talk about an annoyance now. It kind of annoys me a little bit because I have a Instagram account. I couldn't even remember the name then. Instagram account for Guthrie Therapy, and it has like 350 followers. Mm. But that's because it's all mental health based.
Yeah.
It's all quotes. It's all really nice stuff. It's all, I haven't got my top off. I haven't got a six pack. But then you get people with millions of followers, but they're always topless
and they're promoting products.
Yep.
And actually on something like Instagram or Facebook, you only have to follow what you're interested in. So as a young person, if it is all about makeup and products and celebrities, that's all you're going to follow.
Yeah.
So the great messages that other people have got accounts for, like yours would be, they're never seeing that because they don't follow it.
Yeah. So therefore it would never be promoted.
And marketing, we show a video. And in these sessions that we deliver were written and created by Dove, the product, it was originally a soap product, wasn't it? Skincare and stuff product, but the video is, it's kind of showing from the very beginning of a photo shoot for a model.
Yeah.
And she looks nothing like a model.
Yeah.
If you say to the kids, is that a model? They're like, God, no, she's a real plain Jane. And then they speed up how they get to her being on a billboard promoting foundation.
Yeah.
Photoshop. And the kids are like, we didn't know that happened.
Yeah.
Like, are you joking? I'm like, is that the same person? They're like, yeah, of course it is. And I'm like, how is it?
Mm.
Her eyes are in a different position. They've slimmed off her face. They've changed the colour of her eyes. They've changed this. They've changed that to make you believe that that product makes you look like that or be like that. And that's what kids are, they're falling into that trap of, oh my God, look how good her skin is from that foundation when It's not real. Everything's photoshopped.
So therefore, it all becomes... young people are trying to achieve it, but actually it is totally unachievable.
Totally unreal.
Because it's not real.
And it's just for me, in kind of the role that I have, and being able to influence some of those sessions that we do, or being able to roll stuff out. And it's not around flipping the way we think and this kind of huge change shifting.
No.
It's just drip feeding.
Planting some healthier seeds.
Absolutely. That's a great way of putting it. I'm going to use that now when you've said that. And just the prevent, not even the prevention, but just that we talk about it as a subject because we home in on kind of what teachers have to, the math, the English, the science, all of those subjects. But in terms of that person, and I think they call it PSHE, don't they? One of the secondary schools, they call it life lessons.
Yeah.
And they do drop-down days. So they spend a whole day off curriculum doing all these wonderful things that actually as an individual are really important.
Yeah. I do love those. And in my past job, I used to be kind of quite involved in drop-down days. But I'd love to live in a world where it was drip-fed on a daily basis into schools, that it was just, it became a culture and not a, we're going to spend a day doing this.
Yeah.
We're going to learn in a day, and then we're not going to do it again for a year.
Yeah.
Or we're going to spend a week
I agree.
Looking at healthy minds. But for me, it's about the drip feeding.
Yeah. And you said it. I think we were talking off air earlier, and you spoke about mindfulness.
Yeah.
I think we talk about that a lot at work.
Yeah.
And for people who are busy in terms of work, but for children and young people, that is as key.
Yeah.
I think. And the way you explained it earlier in terms of kind of being in a playground, coming back to the classroom and just being allowed to just
sit
before you're then pulled into task, which is fine.
Yeah.
But I just think that we could all be doing that, I think.
We were talking about, the conversation we had earlier was, we were talking about how kids running around in between classes or at playground, and then they run into a class and the teacher's expecting them to sit down and then focus immediately on the task at hand. And I suggested to a school not long back that if they just allowed the children to come in and sit and look at a blackboard, a really nice picture, or I don't know, something that allowed them to sink into something, their energy in their mind would then drop into a space that they were then better learners. But we have an energy in our mind, and if I go to the gym now and run around in the gym for an hour, the energy in my mind is going to go up.
Yeah.
And with that, I become a little bit more anxious, a little bit more nervous. But if I'm aware of that, then I can bring it back down again. Children have no power like that whatsoever. So it is up to the adults around them to begin to teach them that.
Yeah.
So I remember seeing something on Facebook about, there was a school somewhere doing, I mean, it sounded bizarre on the tin, but it was brilliant. They were doing yoga for detention. And I was like, how amazing is that? Brilliant.
We've got to think outside the box. Yeah.
We're rehabilitation,
very,
that
yeah,
is.
We're very rigid in kind of what we deliver and how we look at things. But that's historical. That's because it's learnt behaviour from the past. So at what point, and someone's got to do it, we've got to break the mould and we've got to think outside the box and actually do things a little bit differently to have a different effect. Otherwise, we're just going to have the same effect we've had year on year.
Yeah, you do see people stepping forward and you do see people taking those risks. I'd love sometimes to be in some of these really powerful meetings, but I kind of know that I would sit there and go, why can't we do it? Why can't we do it? And there'd be some head honcho somewhere because we can't. I'd be like, make it happen. Just make it happen.
See, I'm that one that sits in those meetings and has those thoughts, but don't say it because I know it will get shot down. Just no, I'm just, don't say it.
Yeah, but that's because it's your job.
professional.
If I went in there as an independent, I wouldn't care. So I could
but
just
that's
say
the
it.
Thing. We need that, don't we? To kind of change the way we look at things or to change the way we do things.
Yeah.
Because the people that... Oh, God, I'm going to get myself into trouble here. If they're doing that every day, are they necessarily the right people to change things?
No.
We kind of get stuck in a bit of a rut and a bit of a habit of how we do things because we think that's the right way to be doing things.
Yeah, but who says?
Who says that?
But that's because that's the way it's always been done.
Yeah.
And that's why they think it's the right way.
And I think we can change the way that we look at children's mental health in schools, in children's centres, as those children are going in for things like weaning sessions and working with parents. Because until I'd been on this self-esteem workshop, I would never have said half the things they said.
Yeah. You wouldn't have got it.
No, not at all. In terms of like helpful tips and how we can help with children's self-esteem, give them age-appropriate jobs.
Yeah.
That, and if you fail, don't worry, do and do again. Try and try again, because that's great for your self-esteem.
Yeah. Age-appropriate jobs. That's a real bugbear of mine. So sometimes when I'm working with parents and they're talking about the kids and I'm like, but why aren't they doing that themselves? Yeah. And they go, they look at me and go,
because they're children.
And I started doing my own washing and ironing, I think from the age of 12 or 13, because my mum wasn't well. But you know what? It didn't hurt me.
No, of course not.
It's not harmed me in the slightest. I now know how to wash and iron.
And I can remember someone saying to me, let your children make their sandwiches. And I'm like, they're seven. She's like, it's fine. How good do they feel that they've achieved something as simple as butter in the bread?
Yeah.
And I look when I've baked with my children and I have a real thing about like untidiness. So breaking an egg and a bit of the eggshell going in the mix is like, oh my, it just doesn't happen. But actually my daughter's face when she breaks an egg herself when we bake. And I'm talking years ago when we started baking.
Yeah.
But why aren't we letting kids do more?
Because of our, what you described there was our anxiety. placed
makes me feel a bit funny now thinking about it.
placed onto them. But what's the worst that could happen?
Bit of eggshell in the mix.
Yeah. Is anybody going to die?
No.
Probably not. I was going to go somewhere with that. It's gone. But yeah, let them do. Let them grow.
Encourage them. Pet care is a big thing.
Yeah.
Children want pets.
Yeah. Look after them.
Look after them.
Yeah.
And actually, knowing that you've, and we talked about it earlier about three things that you've done today.
Yeah.
If that child can then go, well, I've walked the dog, or I've cleaned out the rabbit, and as a good, congratulate that.
Yeah.
That's home in on those good things that they've done for themselves.
Yeah. For me, balance is a really important word. It's about getting that balance between telling me what you've enjoyed about today and what you like about yourself is a massive one, without it feeling arrogant or big-headed, without using any of those words.
And it's then, and I think as a parent, it's about praise. But not too much and not too little. And getting the balance as a parent around the praise then is a big thing for me.
For me, that would be a two-pronged question of, I'm really proud that you've done that. Now tell me why you're really proud that you've done that.
Seeing you've hit the nail on the head, and I would never, before doing all of the work around like a child's self-esteem and helping improve your child's self-esteem, I kind of look back at when I've said to my children, oh, I'm really proud of you. Well done for that.
Yeah.
Actually flip it.
Yeah.
They've got to be proud of themselves, not you continually saying,
yeah,
I'm really proud of you.
Because if you do that, then they become reliant on you. And as we go through life, as we said earlier, we're always looking for somebody else to validate us or to give us that praise. And there is no more powerful place than being able to give yourself the praise. That's what's important.
Oh, it all links, doesn't it?
Yeah, completely. For me, parenting is about developing, programming, encouraging a young person, a child, into a young adult, into an adult that can leave the family home and survive in the world that we live in and fully function. That is our role as parents. It is not to be there constantly doing stuff for them. It's about to gently encourage them.
Yeah.
We're their carers, and we're their carers for a time until they flee the nest and then they go. And I think sometimes our own ego in terms of parenting gets in the way.
Yeah, it does.
Completely.
And I think it's kind of, as a parent, I said it earlier, don't get a handbook.
No.
So it's kind of going out there and finding all these things that can help.
Yeah.
And I don't get it right every day.
Yeah.
But I do like to think that I'm quite open to suggestions and realising what can and can't affect something as, well, it's not little, is it, self-esteem, but the little impacts that you can have on your child's self-esteem.
Yeah.
And we need to do it more, and we are going to look at doing it more, definitely. These parent classes after school, why not? Yeah. Why not come and listen to a professional talk about how you can help your child's self-esteem, or the impact that social media has, or anti-bullying, or anything that can help your learning as well.
It's so powerful. I'd love to do that, by the way.
have a conversation.
Helen, thank you for that.
Thank you. That was brilliant.
If you have any questions, please ask. Don't forget, we're looking for you to give us a little bit of direction on what areas of mental health you would want covering. You can contact us at radionewark.co.uk. We have iOS and Android apps. Contact info is 01636 678 033. Or you can email us at the studio, which is studio@radionewark.co.uk. We're going to go now until the next podcast. Please be kind and please, please, please take care of yourself.